take some effort to leave the cozy abode and venture out here to such a place, be together with Sangha. Please excuse my dripping, sputtering body. Winter cold at the end of the year. The last Wednesday night talk of the year. As we approach the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year, the longest night of the year. Endings and beginnings are aspects of the way, the Tao, and Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching. The ancient founder of what we call Taoism, the way, said through the mists of ancient times, when unity was attained of old, heaven became clear by attaining unity. Earth became steady or restful by attaining unity. Spirit was quickened by attaining unity. Valley streams were filled by attaining unity. All beings were born by attaining unity. And by attaining unity, lords acted rightly for the sake of the world. What brought this about was unity. Or we might say oneness, oneness or unity. The state of the Tao is unity. Making heaven clear and making the earth steady or peaceful. In Buddha Dharma, we sometimes might think of heaven as like emptiness, vast, spacious, boundless, ungraspability, and earth is like the manifestation of the 10,000 things, all interdependently working together. Unity makes the emptiness clear. Unity makes the interdependent workings of this world peaceful and restful. In our practice, we could say unity is not separating ourself from our experience. There's experience happening. There's body and mind arising and ceasing with 10,000 things. And then there's a sense of me in addition to that. Or me that's doing this activity. And then it gets more and more complex from there, right? We think, well, there's this activity happening, but then there's this me thinking that, looking over at the activity of this body and mind saying, that's not quite right. You shouldn't be quite that way. You shouldn't have a cold. There's no, that doesn't make sense. you shouldn't forget what you were about to say. Come on, get it together, you body and mind experience over there. This is like a division, a divided reality, where there's this body and mind experience that's just being created by the entire universe, and then there's a little kind of assessor, a little judge on the side saying, what are you doing? That's not quite right. Getting closer and closer. Oh, good. Oh, just perfect now. Even that's not quite unity. Yes, you got the experience together. You're doing it just right, Kokyo. That's also still divided. So I might even go so far as to say, when there's no division between me and the experience that's happening, that's like awakening. And it's peaceful and clear and steady, and it benefits the world. And we have a strong old habit of division. Unity. It's always actually what's happening. It's always the case. And yet this split of me from my experience, a hair's breadth difference is as the distance between heaven and earth. So, on this occasion, a few days before the winter solstice, as the days reach their peak of shortness and begin to increase, we celebrate this occasion with Dogen's words on the winter solstice. In the old days, in Japan, China, looks like they saw the, as I understand this, they saw the whole like half year cycle from the summer solstice to the winter solstice as a process of yin, as a kind of like moving towards less activity and receptivity. The leaves falling and the blooming life of spring is now coming to a kind of like non-active state. And then at the winter solstice, the yang time begins, meaning like the active, more active dynamic time begins. It's not exactly that spring starts in a few days, but it is always almost confounding to me that the days start getting longer in just a few days, even though the peak of winter is still coming. Were we talking about this recently? Where one theory is that like the weather is kind of catching up with the with these kind of solar events called the solstices and the equinoxes. So the it takes the weather patterns a few months to kind of catch up with this yang progression of the days after the winter solstice. So this is in the year 1240. Dharma Hall Discourse for the Winter Solstice. Dogen Zenji, our ancient founder, said, quoted this passage in the Tao Te Ching about unity. So sometimes Dogen likes to, critique the Taoist positions from the point of view of his Zen position, but here he's celebrating the ancient Lao Tzu, quoting that passage, attaining unity, heaven is clear, attaining unity, earth is at rest. Then Dogen comments, attaining unity, a person is at peace. Attaining unity, the time becomes bright, or yang. The time after the solstice he's speaking about. As this unity grows, within the days growing longer, the Buddhas and ancestors attain longevity. Everybody here, within this growth, you arouse bodhicitta, the altruistic aspiration for awakening. You practice, you engage the way with effort, and you attain realization of a single phrase. You arouse this aspiration for awakening for the benefit of all beings. You practice based on such a compassionate aspiration. You engage the way with effort towards unity, and you attain realization of a single phrase, such as unity. You have already attained the power and vitality that is within this growth. Therefore, making a mala, you know, a string, a rosary of beads, mala, a mala loop of beads for counting. Making a mala with the bodies of the Buddhas and ancestors, you reach 365 days. So we're celebrating the this particular passage in time that comes once a yearly cycle. Each of the Buddhas and ancestors is one of the 365 beads on this mala, and when you complete one cycle, you're back right here, 4 days before the winter solstice, just like we were last year on this day. Every time this day of the winter solstice arrives, the length of days proceeds just like this. This is exactly the body and mind of the Buddhas and ancestors. So this growth proceeds like this. After a pause, Dogen said, the body and mind of each Buddha now can grow. The face and eyes of jade rings and round jewels are shaped in a heavenly palace. So, things you might make a mala out of, jade rings and round pearls. But these mala beads are made out of the Buddhas and ancestors. They're shaped in a heavenly palace. Having counted each of them, how long and far do they reach? On this auspicious occasion, knowing the count is the single brightness. On this auspicious occasion of 4 days before the winter solstice, knowing the count. Which Buddha and ancestor are we on? This one. This knowing this count is the single brightness, or the single yang. Sometimes Dogen celebrates the changing of the season like this. Apparently in the old days in China, the winter solstice in the Zen temples was like one of the most important days. They say four most like important, auspicious, holy days in the old Zen temples: the opening of the practice period, the closing of the practice period, the winter solstice and New Year's Day. For us, we pack a bunch of those into just a couple weeks here as we just close the practice period. Why they particularly celebrated the winter solstice as opposed to the summer solstice, I don't know. But maybe it's because it's like the very end of the out-breath. The whole year since the summer solstice has been like this long yin out-breath. As Suzuki Roshi once said, die on the out-breath. And such a pause, called the winter solstice, it's like a total spacious, empty potential. Nothing's happening. And then, as the clock ticks one notch, the in-breath comes in. It's the time of yang, in-breath all the way to the summer solstice. So maybe the ancients saw the winter solstice as just like this death of holding on to anything at the very end of the year. At Bukokuji, where Satya and I practiced, we had a massive party on the winter solstice, the only party of the year in the kind of austere Japanese monastery, Toya, which I think means long night. And so it's the longest night of the year. So, and it's the death of everything that's come before. It's the end of the out-breath. So we celebrate. We did some like skits and music and huge feast. Open kitchen. Anybody could just bring anything they want to cook and just like go wild, everyone together. It's kind of unusual to do that within the strict guidelines of the monastery. It's like a free for all open kitchen day. Special bath, as I recall, was like the old wood-fired bath would be fired up only every fifth day. So in the winter, it was a very wonderful day to look forward to. You could soak in that tub kind of as long as you want, I guess, if you pushed it. You had to take, only a couple people could fit in at a time, so you had to, people were waiting, but you could really soak it in. And on the special occasion of the winter solstice, they added some like fragrant leaves and dried flowers and herbs, as I recall. Zen celebration. And it feels like we're winding down our Zen Center year. We have a Zen that will close shortly after the solstice all the way up until New Year's. At the end of the out-breath, nothing will happen here for 5 days or so. And then we start a new year. So this year, at the Zen Center, we've had this Dharma theme of loving-kindness, compassion, and bodhicitta, compassionate aspiration to awaken for and with all beings. And personally, I've really enjoyed it, this opportunity to really look into all these teachings that often you don't find so explicitly in the Zen tradition. loving kindness, or friendliness, we could even say, is openness to others and the sincere wish that all beings be happy, and meeting others with the spirit of may they be happy. And then based on kind of that joyful emotion, that joyful feeling, then we may be willing to open to the kind of darker side of pain and dissatisfaction and suffering. Compassion is very similar to loving kindness, but it's that little twist. Instead of just focusing on the happiness and may all beings be happy, it's may all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. That is the happiness, is the freedom from suffering, and yet it's kind of willing to look at now the suffering too. And then based on this compassion, opening to suffering and wishing others be free from it and meeting others with such a feeling and wish, we try not to cause them suffering, and then we can go even a step further and say, since I want all of us, including myself, to be free from suffering, I will actually give my life, I will commit this body and mind to living for the benefit of all beings and and awakening into unity, to not divide myself from this experience, and to help others not divide themselves from their experience. So together we enter the Buddha way, free from discontent and the causes of discontent. So bodhicitta is like kind of based on compassion, making this aspiration to then like turn my whole life energy in this direction, to not only free all beings from suffering, but in order to do that, to deeply understand how this world works through, in this case, the Buddha Dharma. Loving kindness, compassion, and bodhicitta. There's no end to these practices as we start a new year and a new Dharma theme. The Dharma theme will now be announced for 2015. The middle way. The middle way. In two words, it's an infinitely profound teaching. Utterly simple and utterly profound, and many different angles on this rich topic that can be expressed as in the Buddha's first teaching, the Eightfold Path is expressed as the Buddha says, this is the middle way, realized by the Tathagata, which gives vision and knowledge and peace and joy and the Noble Eightfold Path of living in harmony with ourselves and all beings. In that first sutra, he also talks about the middle way is free from the extremes of self-mortification and self-indulgence, or pursuing self-mortification and pursuing self-indulgence. Somewhere in between there, which is might be like kind of a wide range, is the middle way. So we'll have a year to discover what this means for each of us. And then philosophically speaking, middle way is is taught by Nagarjuna. His verses on the middle way, Madhyamaka in Sanskrit. The middle way that's also free from the extremes of true, substantial, inherent existence, which leads to, we can explore this next year, but is related to and leads to the conduct of self indulgence, and then the other philosophical extreme of utter non-existence, complete nihilistic nothingness, is another extreme, which actually I think it's that this nihilistic extreme leads to self-indulgence, and the solid, real, inherently existing extreme leads to self-mortification. Because there's something here that's a big problem that we have to mortify. We have to like tame it and get rid of it. So, because it really exists, and that we're going to have to use a lot of force to like obliterate it. Whereas, if nothing really exists at all, then it doesn't really matter what we do, so we might as well indulge the self. So there's a middle way called, we don't know what it's called. There's a middle way. It's totally inconceivable. Sometimes people say it's like dependent co-arising. You can't get a hold on it because it's always changing and everything is affecting everything else. Therefore, there's nothing really to hold on to at all. Like a rainbow appearing due to a certain angle of the sun and the clouds and the rain and the eye of the viewer. So, before we finish our year of the kindness, compassion, and bodhicitta, also just a practical example of how we might bring our practice into this in infinite ways, but I was very inspired that a group of Zen Center practitioners went yesterday to visit the Santa Cruz County Jail. People who practice are bringing Zen practice into the jail, including Lori and the other Lori and the Chuck. And who's the other one? Kathy. And so at least four people, very devoted, are ready to bringing mindfulness and zazen and peacefulness and attentiveness into these difficult situations of the local jails. It was moving to see, and it was compassion arousing, because it looked like it's not the happiest place to be. But because of that, we're the 11 of us, brave souls, were willing to take a look at the conditions. There's 400 people living in the jail, just 5-minute walk from here. Right? In a building that was built for 100. So it's not the ideal conditions. And it felt a little awkward to be, the way this jail is set up is we're in the center and there's these pods of different cells in the different directions, so one guard in the center can keep an eye on all the directions, and his console in the center. And they're like one-way glass windows, so we could see them, but the prisoners, but they couldn't see us. It felt a little awkward, like kind of being at a zoo. What struck some of us was For one, they said they have some time outside, and they say, so this is their outside place where they go. We're like, where? I don't quite see. Right here. And we realized the outside place was just another cement cell with a very high open ceiling covered with, you know, chain link fence and barbed wire high above, with solid walls and no windows. So you could see a little sky and you could breathe a little of the outside air. But it was not really outside. And there was no living green material that we saw anywhere in this whole huge compound. No plants, no nature. Humans only. No animals, no plants. Unusual. Maybe people living in inner city, it's not even that unusual, but at least you can go out and see a bush growing out of the sidewalk. But startling in a way to see that kind of lack of nature. Maybe not the most healing environment. And each cell seemed to have a TV that was on. And the guard gets to choose the channel. And so some people were gathered around the TVs in each cell, and you didn't have to be, but it seemed like you couldn't maybe completely escape from the sound of TV. So, and maybe this is seen as a compassionate offering. I don't think it's meant to be like a torture device. I might find it kind of like that, but I think this is our culture, right? People are very used to watching TV, and you see what's on the TV is often a lot of violence and greed, which is part of the cause and effect of all these people being in the jail. It was really like, what kept coming up for me walking through there was like just contemplating cause and effect. I think this is just an example. This is cause and effect playing out. So many conditions, so many people in unfortunate circumstances that end up there. And it may be that the very things in the jail, for example, not being in touch with nature and having like TV going all day, is part of the conditions that people end up in jail. I don't know, maybe this is just a little subset of conditions, right? But how ironic that, if so, it just continues in the environment. And also another piece was that it's mostly younger people. They gave us the figures on a lot of these things, which are amazing to hear some of the statistics. But I think mostly under 40, yeah, and it's 20, a lot of people in their 20s and 30s of young people. How can we make our communities more relevant to young people? It's just a huge open question. And I think these are huge, huge topics that are like, I think it's a whole way that society, that the culture of the, you know, 2014 society is 40 years ago when Zen was being born in America. It was all the younger people. It was a different generation that was really looks like people coming from different values. So I think the cultures has really shifted as a whole. I think this is part of it. But what's that about? So in the Bodhisattva path, we can ask such questions, not looking for definitive answers, but stay open. And I just totally want to express my gratitude for particularly for the Zen Center members going into the jails and working with people who are sometimes difficult to work with, and offering an alternative to TV, at least for an hour or something. as we conclude this Dharma theme for the year, one great spokesperson for bodhicitta and this compassionate aspiration is Shantideva, the great Indian bodhisattva. And so to close with his compassionate aspirations, the guide to the bodhisattva's way of life. With joined palms, I beseech the awakened ones in all directions that they may kindle the light of Dharma for those who fall into suffering due to confusion. With joined palms, I supplicate the awakened ones who wish to leave for Nirvana that they may stay here in this world for countless eons, that this world may not remain in darkness. May the virtue I've gathered by doing all of my practices relieve every suffering of sentient beings. May I be the medicine and the doctor for the sick. May I be their nurse until their illness never recurs. With showers of food and drink, may I overcome the afflictions of hunger and thirst. May I become food and drink during times of famine. May I be an inexhaustible treasury for the destitute. With various forms of assistance, may I remain in their presence. For the sake of accomplishing the welfare of all sentient beings, I freely give up my body, enjoyments, and all my virtues of the three times. May I be a protector for those who are without protectors, a guide for travelers, a boat, a bridge, and a ship for those who wish to cross over. May I be a lamp for those who seek light, a bed for those who seek rest, and may I be a servant for all beings who desire a servant. To all sentient beings, may I be a wish-fulfilling gem, a vase of good fortune, an efficacious mantra, a great medicine, a wish-fulfilling tree, and a wish-granting cow. Just as earth and all other elements, fire, wind, and water, are useful in various ways to innumerable sentient beings dwelling throughout infinite space, so may I be in various ways a source of life for the sentient beings present throughout space until they're all liberated from all suffering. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. And Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.